Hello, ahlan wa sahlan, and welcome to another episode of Arab Voices, coming to you from the studios of KPFT Houston since 2002, Houston's community station 90.1 FM. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. This show is syndicated and it airs on other radio stations in different states in the U.S. In this episode of Arab Voices, we will air some of the remarks delivered at two special events organized by the United Nations over the past couple of weeks on Palestine. We will listen to Palestinian activist and writer Mohammed Al-Kurd, Michelle Bachelet, United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, Wissam Ahmed with Al-Haq Organization, Saleh Hijazi with Amnesty International, Omar Shakir with Human Rights Watch, and Israeli human rights lawyer Michael Sfard. Let's begin with the remarks delivered by Palestinian activist and writer Mohammed Al-Kurd at the International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian People, held on November 29, 2021, and organized by the United Nations.
Hello, international community. Thank you for these groundbreaking speeches. I'm sure the occupation authorities are really concerned right now. My name is Mohammed Al-Kurd, and I am here to deliver a speech. When I was 11, I came home from school and saw my furniture scattered across my street in Sheikh Jarrah, a neighborhood in occupied Jerusalem, occupied Palestine. The street overflowed with soldiers, police, and settlers. My neighbors were screaming and protesting, some of them hospitalized. Settlers had invaded our home and taken over half of it. They said it was theirs by divine decree, as if God is a real estate agent. Now, more than a decade later, they're coming to finish what they started. Billionaire-backed settler organizations protected by the Israeli occupation forces will likely throw out my family from our home forever. Not only my family, but hundreds, if not thousands, of Palestinians in my neighborhood and other communities like Silwan and Al Aisawiya and Masafir Yatta in the South Hebron Hills and elsewhere. This fate of dispossession looms over much of my neighborhood. Our lives are consumed by the anxiety of living on the brink of homelessness. The UN has called this a war crime. But more importantly, I know that this is theft. My community, like all Palestinian communities, is no stranger to dispossession. My grandmother was expelled from her home in Haifa in 1948 when hundreds of thousands of Palestinians were displaced in the Nakba. She found refuge in the 50s after the United Nations, you all, and Jordan built a housing project in Sheikh Jarrah promising that the 28 refugee families would receive legal title to their properties. Then the 1967 war happened. After Israeli forces illegally annexed Jerusalem, several settler organizations, some of which headquartered in the United States, have relentlessly attempted to take over the neighborhood. We obviously tried to fight this forced expulsion in court. But as my grandmother used to say, if the judge is your enemy, to whom do you complain? Israeli land grabbing has been rubber-coated with legislation, making it almost impossible to challenge. Even so, the battle over Sheikh Jarrah is not legal in its essence. It is political. It is part of the larger systematic effort to Israelize the entirety of Jerusalem, my native city. My family and our neighbors understand this. We know firsthand that the Israeli judicial system is created by and for those who benefit endlessly from the Israeli settler colonial regime. As I speak to you, our family lawyer is attempting to persuade a settler judge to rule against settlements. The word apartheid comes to mind, but saying there's asymmetry and injustice in the Israeli judicial system is a gross understatement. What we have on our hands is a colonialist, ideologically driven system built by and for colonizers, working exactly as it was intended to. These unjust laws are not preferential, serving the demographic and political goals of the Zionist project. They are concealed behind a cloak of quasi-democratic, seemingly disputable legislation. This summer, we took our struggle to the streets. Our efforts to resist this takeover were joined by Palestinians across Jerusalem and the world in what became known as the Unity Uprising. The situation rapidly escalated into attacks on besieged Gaza. Palestinians mobilized and resisted, and around the world, people demonstrated in support of the Palestinian right to liberation and decolonization. But months later, the world's attention has moved away. The reality for Palestinians, however, has not changed. Our neighborhood was put under a blockade for 3 months, maintained by Israeli forces with continuing restrictions intended to suffocate the lives of the hundreds of Palestinians who live there. And yet, meanwhile, armed Jewish settlers who have already occupied some of our homes roam freely on the streets, no questions asked. On any given night, a dozen gun-wielding fanatics patrol my street with arrogant impunity. They are protected, even supported, by the troops blockading our community. I have to take a minute to acknowledge the millions under siege in the Gaza Strip, the millions living in an open-air prison. I have to acknowledge the thousands of Palestinian prisoners subjugated in Israeli prisons. I have to acknowledge my neighbor, Murad Atiyeh, an elementary school teacher who was robbed from his family and put into prison, slapped with trumped up and fabricated charges only because he dared say no to ethnic cleansing. You know, I have to ask, what is it that I can say today that has not been said before? How many Palestinians have stood on this platform for decades and decried the same broken promises and unfulfilled UN resolutions? How many of us have tried to articulate the atrocities that everyone in this body knows very well and still ignores? At a certain point in every Palestinian's life, we realize that the Nakba is far from over. It continues every time the Israeli occupation revokes Jerusalem residencies. It blares in street signs stripped of Arabic. It punctures us in constant campaigns of dehumanization. If you're not thrown out of your home, it's demolished. If you're not imprisoned, you're shot in the street. If you're not shot in the street, there's a drone in your sky in the Gaza Strip. If it's not a bomb, it's exile. I am tired of reporting on the same brutality every day, of thinking of new ways to describe the obvious. The situation in my neighborhood, Sheikh Jarrah, is not hard to understand. It is a perfect microcosm of settler colonialism. The reality that Palestinians across 70 years of Zionist rule have experienced. This vocabulary is not theoretical. It is evident in the attempts to throw us out of our homes so that settlers can occupy them with the backing of the regime whose forces and policies provide violent support for the transfer of one population to install another. I do not care whom this terminology offends. Colonial is the correct way of referring to a state whose forces collude in the violence of settlers, whose government works with settler organizations, whose judicial system uses expansionist laws to claim our homes, whose nation-state law enshrines Jewish settlements as a national value to encourage and promote. The appetite for Palestinian lands without Palestinians has not abated for even 7 decades. I know this because I live it. I have no faith in the Israeli judicial system. It is part of the settler colonial state built by settlers for settlers, nor do I expect any of the international governments who have been deeply complicit in the Israeli colonial enterprise to intervene on our behalf. But I do have faith in people around the world, in your citizens, who protest and pressure governments to end what is essentially unconditional support for Israeli policies of ethnic cleansing. Impunity and war crimes will not be stopped by statements of condemnation and raised eyebrows. It will not be stopped by tweets of concerns. We have repeatedly articulated what kind of transformative political measures must be taken. Boycotts and state-level sanction. The problem, again, is not ignorance. It is inaction. The United States has vetoed more than 53 Security Council resolutions critical of Israel. In fact, more than half of the vetoes that the U.S. casted were in favor of Israel. How long must we offer the Israeli occupation impunity? Negotiations are not going to bring about peace, ending impunity well. You know, when we reflect on history's most horrible, most inhumane atrocities today, we think of them with so much moral clarity. So much moral clarity that we tend to forget that when these atrocities were happening, they were perfectly legal. Not only perfectly legal, but at the time that they were happening, they were all once controversial, contested, too complex. People talked with neutral language like we do today. We all think that had it been us there back then, at that point of time, we would have been at the right side of history. And we have that opportunity today to be on the right side of history. I am asking all of you to be brave. The question of Palestine cannot be resolved without a freed Palestine. I know that the occupation will end. Like all injustices, it will end. It must. All empires fall. The Palestinian cause will erupt victorious. I know this. I know that people will look back at the reality we live through today with so much moral clarity. One day there will be museums honoring us, memorials in our remembrance, and statues built in our names. People will stand atop our lands and acknowledge the suffering that happened in them. I just hope that such recognition, such recourse, such reparations happen while the Palestinian people are still here. We deserve justice and liberation within our lifetime. We deserve our land back. Thank you very much.
That was Palestinian activist and writer Mohammed Al-Kurd speaking at the International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people organized by the United Nations. A week later, on December 7, 2021, the United Nations Committee on the Exercise of the Inalienable Rights of the Palestinian People held a special briefing and an event titled Supporting Human Rights Defenders in the Occupied Palestinian Territory, Reality, Challenges, and Obligations. The event centered around the implications of the Israeli decision to designate six Palestinian human rights and humanitarian non-governmental organizations as terrorist organizations. There were several speakers at that event, and we will listen to some of them today. Let's begin with the briefing of the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, Michelle Bachelet.
I'm grateful for the opportunity to brief the committee about the acute concerns of my office regarding the human rights situation in the occupied Palestinian territory. I begin with the situation in Gaza. In May this year, we witnessed the most significant escalation in hostilities since 2014, resulting in the killing of 261 Palestinians, including 67 children. My office determined that 130 of those kills were civilians. This escalation was directly linked to protests and violent responses by Israeli security forces, first in East Jerusalem, then spreading to the entire occupied Palestinian territory and to Israel. A special session of the Human Rights Council was subsequently convened, in which I and other speakers raised serious concerns over the high level of civilian fatalities and injuries resulting from strikes in densely populated areas, as well as the widespread destruction of civilian infrastructure, noting that such attacks raise serious concerns of compliance with international humanitarian law. At that time, the Human Rights Council decided to establish an ongoing, independent international commission of inquiry with a mandate to investigate, and I will quote, all alleged violations and abuses of international human rights law leading up and since 13 April 2021, end of quote. I was also mandated to investigate, and again, I will quote, all underlying root causes of recurrent tensions, instability, and protraction of conflict, including systematic discrimination and repression based on national, ethnic, racial, or religious identity, end of quote. My office has been provided administrative support to the establishment of the commission, which expected to present its first report at the Human Rights Council session in June 2022. In addition to recurrent cycles of hostilities, the people of Gaza also continue to suffer from a 15-year land, sea, and air blockade, leading to a continuous and deeply damaging deterioration of human rights and humanitarian conditions. Vital infrastructure is crumbling. The decaying sewer system constitutes a threat to health, as I noted in my report to the Human Rights Council September session on the allocation of water resources in the occupied Palestinian territory. Severe movement restrictions and obstructions to people's access to essential goods and services, including specialized health care, generate immense suffering. I have repeatedly emphasized that Palestinians have the right to live safely and freely in their homes, with adequate access to essential services and opportunities, amid respect for their right to life and physical integrity. Instead, in the lived reality of the occupation and blockade, they are systematically deprived of the fundamental rights and freedoms due to every human being. Reconstruction and recovery efforts are ongoing in Gaza, and the fragile cessation of hostilities continues to hold. However, although some goods have been gradually allowed to enter Gaza through the Israel-controlled Kerem Shalom crossing, as well as the Egypt-controlled Rafah crossing, humanitarian conditions remain deeply concerned. Further steps are needed by all parties to ensure a sustainable solution that ultimately leads to the return of legitimate Palestinian governmental institutions to the Gaza Strip. Let me turn to the issue of civic freedoms. Excellencies, on 19th of October, Israel designated six Palestinian civil society organizations as terrorist organizations under Israel's counterterrorism law of 2016. On the 7th of November, they were also declared unlawful in the occupied territory under the Emergency Defense Regulations of 1945. These designations appear to have been based on vague or unsubstantiated reasons, including claims related to legitimate and entirely peaceful human rights activities. All six organizations have worked with the international community, including the UN, for decades, collectively defending human rights and providing humanitarian assistance for thousands of people. My office has also received credible reports that the notorious Pegasus spyware was installed on the mobile phone of some staff of the six designated organizations. Claims of links to terrorism are extremely serious and should be treated as such by all. The basis for such allegations must be of the highest standard, based in probable evidence, and should be made in transparent manner. Without adequate substantive evidence, these decisions appear arbitrary and further erode the civic and humanitarian space in the occupied Palestinian territory. They can therefore legitimately be viewed as an attack on human rights defenders, on the right to freedom of association, opinion and expression, and on the right to public participation. This pattern of pressures on civil society groups, notably those who work to document and defend Palestinian human rights, has existed for many years. Israel's continuous policy of restricting the space for legitimate activities of civil society is inconsistent with its obligations under international human rights law. It also threatens to limit further the space for peaceful dialogue. I also regret that actions by the Palestinian Authority have contributed to restricting the civic space for Palestinians. The right to freedom of expression and peaceful assembly are increasingly curtailed. Since June 2021, my office has documented cases of assaults on journalists and human rights defenders, as well as intimidation, gender-based violence and harassment, excessive use of force, arbitrary arrest, and censorship. In Gaza, the de facto authorities have also restricted Palestinians' right to freedom of expression and peaceful assembly, with particular targeting of journalists through raids, arrests, and harassment. Excellencies, my concerns continue to deepen about the numerous killings and injuries of Palestinians across the occupied Palestinian territory by Israeli forces, as well as increasingly by armed settlers. The use of excessive or entirely unwarranted force by Israeli forces appears in many instances to be a measure of first rather than last resort, as required under international law. I am particularly alarmed at recurrent incidents of excessive use of force leading to the death and injury of Palestinian children. On the 5th of November, a 15-year-old Palestinian boy was shot with live ammunition in the abdomen and killed by Israeli forces stationed about 50 meters away during demonstrations in Deir al-Habad near the illegal Israeli settlement Elon Moreh. This year, Israeli forces have killed 16 children in the West Bank, including East Jerusalem. This and all other killings, as well as all incidents of excessive and unwarranted use of lethal force by Israeli forces, must be thoroughly and effectively investigated, and those responsible held to account. The chronic impunity in the occupied Palestinian territory for violations has been repeatedly raised in reports by the Secretary General and myself. Settler-related violence is also at alarming high levels amid continued tensions over settlement expansion and the annual olive harvest season. In the past year, there have been 490 incidents resulting in death, injury, and/or significant property damage, the highest incidence of settler violence even recorded by the United Nations. Currently, it represents an average of almost one incident of settler violence each day. The severity of the violence has also intensified, with four Palestinians killed and 167 injured by settlers, including seven with live ammunition. In three additional cases, it was not possible to determine whether the victims were killed by ISF or by settlers. Despite reports that the Israeli authorities have taken steps, the justice system continues to fail to hold settlers accountable for violence against Palestinians. This lack of accountability for settler violence contributes to the increased number and severity of attacks. I note also that the approval, planning, and construction of Israeli settlements continued unabated across the occupied West Bank, including East Jerusalem. In the past year, settlers have established 12 new outposts in the West Bank. Most recently, on the 24th of October, Israeli authorities announced tenders for some 1,350 housing units in settlements. The announcement also included the reusations of tenders for some 80 units in the settlement of Givat Hamatos, and with further curtail access and links between East Jerusalem and Bethlehem. Excellencies, children continue to suffer disproportionate impact from the recurrent cycles of military escalation and associated deprivation. Reports by our UN partners indicate that 70% of all children in Gaza are in need of mental health and psychosocial support, as well as other community and family-based services. Currently, 160 Palestinian children are detained by Israel, some of them without charge, under administrative detention regulations, whereas international law provides that arrest, detention, or imprisonment of a child should be used only as a measure of last resort and for the shortest appropriate period of time, and that children must benefit from a child-friendly justice system that minimizes the challenges they face in each aspect of a legal proceeding. It should be clearly understood that under international law, administrative detention is permitted only in exceptional circumstances and must be subject to strict safeguards to prevent arbitrariness. This is not the case in the occupied Palestinian territory today. We also continue to receive disturbing reports of the ill treatment of children during their arrest, transfer, interrogation, and detention by Israeli authorities. Excellencies, overall, the human rights situation in the OPT at present can fairly be characterized as disastrous, with severe infringement of the inalienable rights of over 4 million people in numerous domains. This clearly also has damaging impact on prospect for peace and sustainable development for Israel as well as the surrounding region. The root causes of the violation I have described need to be addressed so that the continuing cycles of violence can be stopped. This requires the commitment of the international community to ensure long overdue accountability for all violation of human rights and humanitarian law in the occupied Palestinian territory by whoever committed. As we have repeatedly said, no matter how long the road has been, never-ending cannot be an acceptable description for any situation in which human rights are violated and abused. Only an end to the occupation can bring about lasting peace and establish the condition in which the human rights of all can be fully respected. I thank you for your attention.
That was Michelle Bachelet, United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights. Next, we will listen to the remarks of Wissam Ahmad, Director of the Applied Center for International Law at Al Haq Organization, one of the six organizations designated by Israel as a terrorist organization.
The recent Israeli Minister of Defense's designation of six Palestinian civil society organizations as terrorist organizations, followed by military orders along the same lines, may have sent shockwaves throughout the international community. But for those of us working within these organizations, it was no surprise. For years, Israel has been trying to undermine the efforts of Palestinian civil society, standing in the way of its colonial policy without much success in comparison to the amount of resources it has dedicated. Despite the deference given to Israel in its allegations, the international community has not been convinced that Israeli claims are representative of the truth. This failure has led Israel to create its own version of the truth through its power to impose laws which reinforce its narrative with the expectation that the cover of law will force capitulation. The use of such tactics, however, is not new in the historical context of relational dynamics between colonizer and colonized, oppressor and oppressed. From the Americas to Africa, in Europe and Asia, similar tactics have been used throughout history to justify persecution and subjugation of those in pursuit of justice, accountability, and truth. in the context of an asymmetrical power balance under the premise that might makes right. The work our organizations do is aimed at bringing the truth about what is happening on the ground to the international community, with the hope that the exposure to the facts as applied to international law would lead to action. Over time, we've developed a more proactive approach towards advocating for the enforcement of international law by targeting the political will of the international community and using the mechanisms that have been developed and designated as the legitimate tools through which the right to self-determination should be pursued. With our refinement in the use of such tools, such as the International Criminal Court, the Convention Against Apartheid, an area of business and human rights, we've been able to challenge Israel's colonial policy by confronting the impunity it enjoys, its narrative of adherence to democratic values and the rule of law, as well as the economic incentive structure facilitating and perpetuating its continued colonization of Palestine. Our success in mounting these challenges have naturally made Israel uncomfortable, with its recent moves simply being an attempt to remove the source of this discomfort and a natural reaction of speaking truth to power. Nevertheless, despite Israel's ability to take direct action against Al-Haq and the other organizations, it has opted for a more indirect approach. This approach makes use of the development of international law around the financing of terrorism, with the expectation that the term alone will instill fear in the international support system of solidarity and the external mechanisms through which it functions, leaving us isolated and unsustainable. By drawing on behavioral psychology, Israel's strategy is to secure the capitulation of those enabling the oppressed to resist the oppressor, not because of conviction and a belief in the truth, rather because of fear. In the behavioral response of fight or flight, Israel is betting on flight. That's because the target is you as members of the international community as much as it is us as representatives of Palestinian civil society. Israel's latest attempt to silence Palestinian civil society is just another tactical move in its colonial strategy, which aims to remove the obstacles in pursuit of such a strategy. This attempt, like others before it, however, is bound to fail because the message is bigger than the messenger it is targeting, and the pursuit of truth is part of human nature that cannot be eradicated. Nevertheless, how far Israel tries to go with these tactics is very much dependent on you, the international community. In physics, Newton's first law of motion is that an object in motion remains in motion unless acted upon by an external force. Israel's colonial appetite and the imperial mindset driving it is that force, which will continue to push forward unless you, members of the international community, act against it. Israel is testing your resolve with regard to Palestinian civil society in the same way it tests your resolve with its settlement enterprise. If it is only met with words of concern and condemnations, then it will only continue to push further. And it won't stop with the six, because it will always see those civil society actors serving as an obstacle to its colonial ambitions as a threat. Now, from psychology to physics to economics, members of the international community must act to reconcile their political rhetoric with economic activity and relations with Israel, because Israel has continued to refine colonial practices to develop a best business practice of colonialism in Palestine. Israel's refinement of the means and methods of oppression and control form part of its broader policy in making the continued colonization of Palestine a profitable business venture, which our work aims to challenge. Through the impunity Israel has enjoyed, it has not only been able to exploit the Palestinian population to secure a captive market of consumption, it has also used that same captive population as a laboratory for the research and development of weapons and surveillance technology, which is then marketed and sold around the world as Israeli innovation. The recent discovery of the use of Pegasus spyware to target Palestinian human rights defenders, including the staff of the designated organizations, is a case in point. It cannot be a coincidence that Israel's designation coincided with the discovery of spyware on the device of an Al-Haq staff member. Likewise, it is because of the nature of our work in this context, which triggered the intuitive response of suspicion and investigation that may have been missed otherwise. It is important to note that our concerns were not merely regarding the use of the surveillance technology as such, rather the potential abuse of such technology to fabricate evidence that could be later used as secret evidence, which is immune from objective scrutiny, considering the deference given by the Israeli judicial system to its security apparatus. That's why Israel's most recent attack on Palestinian civil society must not only be seen as an attempt to remove the obstacles to Israel's general colonial policy, it must also be seen as a specific attempt to distract us from pursuing the investigation and preemptively undermine our position in the eyes of the international community in order to secure a key component of its economic incentive structure, perpetuating the continued oppression of the Palestinian people and the suppression of the truth. Members of the international community must take action against this attack against civil society, as its persecution of these organizations is part of the crime of apartheid and should not be recognized. And this non-recognition must be expressly made by all members of the international community. In closing, last month, an Israeli official stood at the podium of the UN General Assembly and tore up the annual report of the UN Human Rights Council. This coincides with the first year that Israel is a member of the ECOSOC committee. This action shows us what Israel thinks about the work of human rights defenders and the international human rights regime that has evolved thanks to the sacrifice of so many human rights defenders. In response, I would like to show Israel and the world what I think about its designation and action towards the six. We ask you to stand with us, stand with the six, and not let this go unanswered. Thank you.
That was Wissam Ahmed, director of the Applied Center for International Law at Al-Haq Organization. You're listening to Arab Voices, coming to you from the studios of KPFT Houston since 2002. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Next, we will listen to the remarks of Saleh Jazi, head of the Jerusalem office of Amnesty International.
For years, Palestinian civil society and those who advocate for respect and protection of human rights in Israel and the occupied Palestinian territories have been warning about shrinking space. Shrinking space became the term used to describe Israel's policies toward Palestinian civil society actors, policies that restrict and punish those daring to expose Israel's systematic human rights violations and advocate for Israel to be held accountable. The term has also been used to encompass how Palestinian authorities in the West Bank and Gaza Strip have also increased their crackdown on Palestinian civil society actors, including activists and human rights defenders. As a result, human rights activists face repression from both Israeli and Palestinian authorities and often find themselves stuck between a rock and a hard place. This has been going on for years, despite repeated warnings by civil society actors on the ground and around the world about the dangers of Israel's attacks. Since at least 2015, Israel's governments have escalated intimidation of Palestinian and Israeli human rights defenders and activists that call for an end to Israel's systematic violations and for accountability for crimes under international law, including through boycotts as a form of advocacy. Israeli officials have repeatedly threatened, smeared, and stigmatized Israeli human rights defenders and human rights NGOs, demonizing them as foreign agents and traitors, and have failed to protect those who face attacks from Israeli settlers or right-wing activists. Palestinian activists and NGOs engaging with the International Criminal Court's examination of the situation in the OPT have been subjected to the sustained campaign of electronic surveillance within the OPT and further afield, including in The Hague. While Palestinian cultural centers and organizations in Israel and East Jerusalem have been subjected to harassment. The Israeli authorities have also increasingly hindered access for humanitarian workers engaging in advocacy against IHL violations by imposing bureaucratic obstacles. Further, Israel's parliament, the Knesset, adopted legislation that imposes new reporting requirements on organizations that receive funding from foreign governments, almost all of which are human rights groups. In addition, NGOs apparently working in coordination with Israeli officials or are otherwise aligned with Israeli government policy towards Palestinians have intensified their efforts to block the funding of Israeli and Palestinian rights NGOs by demonizing the former as unpatriotic and the latter as anti-Semitic or affiliated with terrorist organizations without proving any credible evidence for any of the claims. Meanwhile, the authorities continue to prosecute Palestinian human rights defenders in military courts in the occupied Palestinian territories, including for organizing peaceful protests against Israel's occupation policies. Over the course of the last couple of years, attacks are intensified, and we are now faced with a situation where legitimate and vital civil society work, including defending human rights, is made criminal. Throughout these years, the strategy of attack against human rights defenders was clear. It starts with smears and attempt of delegitimization, making baseless but loud claims against individuals and organizations. Once these baseless claims catch the listening ear of decision makers in Western countries who engage with the claims without serious and meaningful questioning, Then the attack is escalated to try and stop the funding and support provided for civil society on the ground. It is precisely because these attacks were allowed to continue unimpeded, at the same time that Israel is allowed to continue with systematic violations under international law with impunity, that we are where we are today. Shrinking space is no longer a valid term. We are now facing attempts to close the space entirely. The recent designation of the six organizations, including leading human rights groups, as terrorist organizations is a very dangerous advancement in Israel's attacks against Palestinian civil society. But it is also not new. Such attempts to criminalize legitimate and vital human rights work and the people and the organizations carrying it out has been going on for a while now. Earlier this year, Israel designated the Health Workers Committees, one of the major organizations providing vital health services in the OPT, as a terrorist organization, and then moved to close down its headquarters in Ramallah and arrested members of its staff, including the director of the organization, human rights defender Shada Oude, who is currently in prison. These designations and the actions that follow are based on secret information that not the groups nor their legal representatives are able to see or challenge. Secret information is widely used to restrict and or attack the rights of Palestinians, including human rights defenders and groups. It is used in the recent attempt to criminalize the six organizations and others. It is used in detaining human rights defenders without charge or trial and to restrict the freedom of movement. It is so widely used because Israel enjoys being able to carry out such policies without question, let alone accountability. And here is the main point. While none of the world powers that uphold principles of rule of law and human rights are confronting Israel's impunity, let alone hold it accountable for violations under international law, these human rights defenders on the ground are pushing the other way. Expose Israel's violation and advocate for accountability, whether by pushing third states to uphold the responsibility or through the International Criminal Court or through the UN mechanisms. The organizations that Israel criminalized and their staff face real and imminent threats, including closure of offices, arrest and detention of staff, the confiscation of assets, and suspension of crucial funding that allows them to work. This is a real danger with wide implications, including for the work of international organizations like ourselves. Because at the time when Israel also works to restrict the work of Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch, it also prevents UN human rights monitors access to Israel and occupied Palestinian territories, making the work of local human rights defenders ever more vital and requiring meaningful and strong support from us all. But let us be clear, it is already very dangerous to be carrying out human rights work in Israel and the occupied Palestinian territories. In past years, human rights defenders have been detained, injured, and some have been killed while carrying out their work. Moving to criminalize this work just adds to an already deadly mix. The strategic danger is where space for human rights work is shut down almost completely. The risk is that the patterns of human rights that are continuously exposed because of the work of local human rights groups are no longer visible and eventually normalized. This will result in a situation where the rule of law and respect for human rights becomes relevant only to certain areas around the world, but not others. A situation of black holes of impunity that will work to undermine the international system we are all working to preserve. The situation requires immediate and decisive action. First, expose Israel's recent actions for what they really are, an attack against human rights defenders with implications for the wider international human rights movement. We must ensure that support, both political and financial, to Palestinian civil society continues, allowing its sustainability and ability to protect itself from attacks. This includes making clear that Israel's terrorist designation of the six organizations and others are arbitrary, baseless, and should not be considered by states, donor agencies, or financial institutions. Must ultimately ensure that Israel and Israeli nationals are held accountable for violations under international law by supporting ongoing investigations by the Human Rights Council and the International Criminal Court and pressuring Israel to allow international investigators and human rights monitors in. We must make clear that the era of impunity is over. Thank you very much.
That was Saleh Hijazi, head of the Jerusalem office of Amnesty International, speaking at an event titled Supporting Human Rights Defenders in the Occupied Palestinian Territory, Reality, Challenges, and Obligations. That event was organized by the United Nations Committee on the Exercise of the Inalienable Rights of the Palestinian People. Next, we will listen to the remarks of Omar Shakir, Israel and Palestine Director at Human Rights Watch, who himself was expelled by Israel from the occupied Palestinian territories for doing his work.
The merits of today's topic go far beyond the contours of Israel and Palestine. Indeed, the Israeli government's designation of six prominent Palestinian civil society organizations as terrorist organizations and subsequent maneuvers by Israeli authorities, military authorities to outlaw these organizations represent a frontal assault on the international human rights movement. And how the international community responds will be a true test of its resolve to protect human rights defenders across the globe. As my colleague and friend Wissam noted in the beginning of his presentation, this decision did not come out of nowhere. It is an escalation and a prolonged campaign by the Israeli government to muzzle human rights advocacy. That campaign has involved a series of different maneuvers, some of which my colleague and friend Saleh Hijazi also laid out, and includes efforts, of course, to deny entry to international human rights activists, to deport some of those in country. It includes efforts to malign and attack Israeli human rights advocates. It includes efforts to restrict the speech and activities of international human rights activists across the globe using a network of pro-government, non-governmental organizations, and often with the support of the Israeli government itself. But let's be clear. Palestinians have always borne the brunt of that repression. For years, and in fact for decades, Palestinian human rights defenders have faced raids on their offices, have faced punitive travel bans, and even arrest and criminal charges. For far too long, the response of the international community to all these actions has been inaction. The response was paltry even when these circumstances, to a much lesser degree, affected representatives of Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International. When the Israeli government deported me 2 years ago, we warned the international community that if it failed to act then, in a matter of months or years, we could be facing a situation where local civil society groups have been outlawed. That's where we are today. Where we will be in 2 years will depend on how the international community reacts today. After Human Rights Watch said this, Amnesty International made similar calls. When a staff member of theirs, a Palestinian staff member of theirs, faced a punitive travel ban that prevented him from attending, being by his mother as she passed away from cancer kilometers away in occupied East Jerusalem, or to leave the country. And again, it was met with inaction. And of course, when these events have affected Palestinians, the inaction has been even greater, and sometimes even led to a situation where condemnations are not forthcoming. Of course, this stems from a much larger issue. The Israeli government's designation stems from them being emboldened by decades of impunity for grave human rights abuses, including the crimes against humanity of apartheid and persecution. Indeed, if the international community lacks the resolve to protect those documenting human rights abuses, how will it ever stop human rights abuse in the first place? As Saleh also mentioned, the attack on human rights defenders stems from a decades-long reality where the Israeli government has imposed laws and policies and practices that deprive Palestinians of their basic rights, including their basic civil rights, the right to freedom of association, assembly, and expression. If the international community wants a different outcome this time, it's going to need a different approach. The Israeli government has made a bet. It is banking on the fact that the international community will rely on the same playbook. The same playbook it's used when settlements are expanded and where other human rights abuses have taken place, where the international community may issue a statement, may or may not be a strong one, but eventually will move on and will accept the status quo as a fait accompli. In this case, we're already seeing that playbook bear out. At first, international governments responded by saying, we need to see the evidence. Here we are. 6 weeks later, there is no evidence. But we've yet to see many countries in the international community call out that reality for what it is. It's time to move beyond speaking of evidence. It's time to move beyond this idea that, well, so long as the Israeli government doesn't act on this, it's okay. We need to move beyond accepting this as a reality. It's critical that the international community call this out and act on this behalf. Let me conclude with five recommendations, clear and concrete things that the international community should do today to ensure that these designations, these maneuvers don't lead to the out, you know, to the in practice outlawing of these organizations. First, they need to condemn clearly and unequivocally these maneuvers and call for them to be immediately rescinded. Secondly, the governments must make clear that they consider the Israeli government's designations null and void and without legal effect and convey that message to donors and other actors. Thirdly, governments should meet with representatives of the six organizations at the highest level and in country and convey their support for them in their work. Fourth, if the Israeli government fails to immediately rescind these designations, they should impose countermeasures. Words will not suffice. Fifth and finally, governments must link these attacks on human rights defenders to the larger context against which this takes place. And that context includes at its heart the Israeli government's crimes against humanity of apartheid and persecution. Apartheid is the reality for millions of Palestinians, and it's time the international community recognized that reality for what it is. In closing, let me say that these six organizations not only represent the best of Palestinian civil society, they represent the best of global civil society. They have long been models to countries across the globe. They include people that serve on our boards, our closest partners, our closest allies. An attack against them is an attack against each of us that is concerned about international law and human rights. Let's be fully clear about what's happening here. This is an existential threat to Palestinian civil society. This is an existential threat to human rights reporting in Israel and Palestine. Act now before it's too late. Thank you.
That was Omar Shakir, Israel and Palestine Director at Human Rights Watch. Next, we will listen to the remarks of Michael Sfard, Israeli human rights lawyer.
Almost seven weeks have passed since Israel has designated six Palestinian civil society organizations, including some of the most famous, well-respected, and veteran human rights Palestinian human rights organizations, as terrorist organizations. Almost 7 weeks have passed, and Israel has failed to present to the public, to the Israeli public, to the Palestinian public, to the international community, any shred of evidence of its allegations. Almost 7 weeks have passed, and the international community, while we heard some condemnations and statements of concern, has not taken a clear act in response to this worrying and watershed moment in the history of Israeli targeting Palestinian civil society. Excellencies, the history of the Israeli targeting of Palestinian human rights community and Israeli human rights community was well described by my friends and colleagues that spoke before me. But the specific history of targeting these specific Palestinian human rights organizations that have been designated exposes the real motivation behind the designation. As said before me, the designation did not come out of the blue. The designation are the peak of a stream, years of targeting these organizations by different means, and specifically by trying to dry out their funds, by convincing their governmental, mainly European donors, to stop supporting them in order for them to be silenced by economic suffocation. The concern that the Israeli government had about these organizations was always their legal advocacy, in their public advocacy in international institutions, and mainly the facilitation they provide to the work of the International Criminal Court. The Israeli government has ascribed to the investigation handled by the International Criminal Court as a strategic threat to its policies, and thus silencing and curbing the organizations that assist and facilitate these investigations has become a strategic aim for the government of Israel. The failure to convince the supporting governments to stop their work with these organizations has brought about the violent act of the designation. Now, have no doubt about it. Under Israeli law and under the military Israeli law that prevails in the West Bank, the designation of an entity as a terrorist organization is the NGO equivalent of the death penalty. It's a legal execution. Such a designation creates, invokes a set of administrative powers, radical, draconian administrative powers, and prohibitions, the violations of which are criminal, that are aimed at forcing the seclusion of the end of the designated entity and eventually its annihilation. Of course, Israel is using these powers selectively and sometimes arbitrarily when it fits its goals, interests, and the timing is ripe. And so even if we have not seen in the last almost 7 weeks a raid on the offices of the designated entities, the closure of their offices, the arrest of their volunteers, the detention of their executives and board members, even if we have not seen the confiscation of the organization's properties, that does not mean it will not happen tomorrow. And more importantly, when Israel wishes, and I think this is the most clear goal that the designation was a place to achieve, to block any transfers of resources to the Ramallah bank accounts of these organizations, now it is able to do it. It does not need anymore to convince the donors to stop donating. It can simply block the transfers and expropriate the resources as proceeds of terror. Israel has also abused the term terrorism on the way, because the Israeli counterterrorism law has a definition of terrorist organization that is wide and can and in fact does swallow the entire Palestinian society, that is a society that fights for its freedom and independence. Because if terror organization is defined not only as an entity that carries out acts of terror, but also as an entity that provides services to or has links to an organization that was previously designated, there is a potential of recursiveness that indeed creates an infectious disease of guilt by association. And that is exactly what we have seen here. The type of evidence that was presented to the public is really embarrassing. It is trying to convince the international community that these organizations that have an immense record of working for hundreds of thousands of beneficiaries, securing their rights and their freedoms, are terrorist organizations because they have, because of guilt by association of people who are working for them or have in the past been under administrative detention and things of that sort. This is absolutely infuriating. Excellencies, ambassadors, and members of the public of the audience, on Friday, we will all indicate the International Human Rights Day, 76 years after the Universal Declaration on Human Rights was signed. The day before, on Thursday, we will indicate 23 years to the signing of the UN General Assembly Declaration on the Rights of Human Rights Defenders. The framers of the Declaration on the Rights of Human Rights Defenders understood that without defenders of human rights, there are no human rights. That without defenders, it is easy for tyrants to violate, to breach with impunity human rights. This is the story we're seeing now in Israel. It's the old story of silencing dissenting voices, silencing criticism, and making sure that investigations like the International Criminal Court's investigation that is aimed at creating some accountability for the crimes committed by the Israeli regime in the occupied Palestinian territories will not go unpunished, try to block it, to frustrate it by silencing those who aid it. Distinguished ambassadors and excellencies, it is a watershed moment, not because the Israeli occupation has not done worse things. It has. It killed people. It maimed people. It forcibly removed whole communities and transferred them, deported them. However, there is something about the designation of these six Palestinian civil society groups, who are the backbone of Palestinian civil society, that has some boldness in it. As my friend, dear friend and colleague, Omar Shakir said before, it's a bet. It's a bet that Israel has taken. They climbed, the Israeli government climbed a high mountain. At the beginning, it was quite windy up there, but now it waits for the wind to subside. We should not allow it to subside. We should not allow this bet to bear any fruits. And for that, I will not repeat the recommendations made by the previous speakers. I will just say the international community and mainly members of the international community who have been supporting these organizations in the past have to make a pledge, and a public pledge, that they will continue to support these organizations. They expect Israel not to block their taxpayers' money when they pass it, for these organizations to continue their work in securing human rights in Palestine. I hope that this bet will show future tyrants, future dictators, that this blueprint that Israel has created on how to silence civil society is not working. Because if it does work, we will see these acts being carried out in many other places. Thank you.
That was Michael Sfar, Israeli human rights lawyer, speaking at an event titled Supporting Human Rights Defenders in the Occupied Palestinian Territory, Reality, Challenges, and Obligations. That event was organized by the United Nations Committee on the Exercise of the Inalienable Rights of the Palestinian People and was held on December 7, 2021. And that does it for the show today. Thanks for listening. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Until we meet next week, peace on earth.